Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for November's Exotics Club webinar. I'm delighted to welcome back to Webinar Club our speaker for today, Senior Clinician in Rabbit and Exotic Animal Medicine and Surgery at the Royal Dick School of Veterinary Studies, Jenna Richardson. Thank you, Jenna. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Hello, thank you very much. Well, today we're going to talk about the use of computed tomography scanning in rabbits, so CT scanning, and it is quite a niche topic, so we're going to have a bit of an overview in terms of the common imaging modalities that we're already using in general practice, then focusing in on CT scanning in particular, and when the indications for its use would be. Whether we can do that conscious, sedated, or having to have a general anaesthetic for our patients. And then we'll have a look through some images of both healthy anatomy and also some pathology diagnosed by CT evaluation. So I think the first thing that's always important to think about is what happens when the patients come in to us? And very often, particularly with exotic animals, our patients are arriving in quite debilitated states. So this poor little rabbit in the photo here, quite typical, coming in when disease processes are really quite far along. And that's because as prey animals, they are very good at hiding signs of clinical disease, but also some owners may not be quite as in tune with picking up of these clinical signs. So a rabbit that's coming in through your door in the vet practice, obviously we're doing a thorough and full clinical examination. We're taking a full history to make sure that we know vaccination status, any previous health issues, diet, companionship and so forth. And then usually our starter investigation involves taking some blood for biochemistry and hematology, perhaps performing urinalysis, and then that's the stage at which we're often looking to perform some diagnostic imaging. And from the results of all those things, obviously we can then perhaps require surgery or just medical management. So in practice, obviously we've got our ultrasound and our radiography for diagnostic imaging. More at a referral level, we've got our CT and also our MRI. So beginning with ultrasound, obviously this is a very useful modality. And what is ultrasound? Well, I guess the term ultrasound really just means any sound waves with a frequency above the sort of audible range of human hearing, so over about 20,000 hertz. Diagnostic ultrasound, so typically uses frequency between 2 megahertz to 18 megahertz. And in rabbits, typically, we're using transducers or probes between 5 to 7.5 megahertz. The lower range of the frequency, so that's the one that we can penetrate deeper with the tissues, but with poorer sort of definition. Whereas if we're using the higher frequency for the transducer, then those sound waves are sort of more readily absorbed into the tissues. So they might provide a better definition, but we're more superficial with how deep we can go. Now, in practice, ultrasound is used readily, and obviously it's a little bit of an art form when it comes certainly to the interpretation of those images. But nonetheless, it is very, very useful. I still use and rely on ultrasound as my sort of first-line diagnosis for identifying problems with the urinary system and also for reproductive problems as well. But it is very important for collecting samples, so we can do ultrasound-guided fine needle aspirates or ultrasound-guided true cut biopsies, and also collecting fluid for cytological examination as well. The procedure of ultrasound exam, so if we are just taking a quick fluid sample or a quick FNA, obviously that's quite speedy. But if we are wanting to do, for example, a full abdominal scan, then actually that can take quite a bit of time, anywhere up to 40 minutes and sometimes even an hour. So that can put quite a bit of strain on what might already be quite a sick patient. And then we have to think whether or not restraint with manual or, in fact, sedation is warranted. So in terms of restraint, I mean, most rabbits will tolerate ultrasound examination conscious. However, if they're painful and then you're putting a probe on the abdomen, or if they're young and just not used to being handled, then it could be that the rabbit tries to kick out. And you know, we all know that rabbits have a proportionally lighter skeleton than dogs and cats, but they do have these very powerful muscles as well. So struggling could lead to injury and you know, potential fractures. So as well as the limitations with restraint, we often have to remember that with debilitated rabbits, they may actually just be teetering on the edge of hypothermia. So we might be at the low end of the normal reference range for temperature. But once we've clipped the fur, we've put on cooling ultrasound gel, it can certainly exacerbate the problem. And actually, the benefit of an ultrasound examination can actually be inhibited simply by the GI content in the rabbit. So playing a little bit of havoc, casting gas shadows with an ingest obviously getting in the way as well. So, you know, although it certainly is extremely useful, it does have limitations beyond, you know, pregnancy diagnosis or diagnosing a pyometra, for example. So just a couple of examples where it is very useful. As I said, urinary tract is it's very handy to be having a look with the ultrasound probe, and we can see this very large, well-defined cystic structure, which is just a big cyst on one of the kidneys, possibly the cause of the GI stasis the rabbit had presented for, causing some pain and discomfort. And another image. So again, this is something that could have been detected on X-ray as well, but this outline here is the bladder stone that you can see in the picture, and this is just the outline of the bladder wall here. So very useful for a lot of conditions for diagnosis, but certainly does have limitations as well. So for radiography, and I guess arguably radiography is probably the most common modality that we are using in general practice. And in rabbits, the most common and frequent reasons for performing radiographs on a patient is for often dental disease staging, as well as assessment of gas within the GI tract. Very good for assessing and grading GI bloat, also for trying to identify if we've got obstruction with, you know, ingested foreign bodies. Any fractures, and also if we've got, you know, any radiopaque urinary calculi as well. So just some of many indications that we have for use of radiography. The image here shows a barium study being performed in a rabbit. What we can see, so we've got some barium still within the stomach, showing the gastric outline here. Now this stomach is a little bit smaller than it should be, and because we've already got barium within the colon, actually there was a delayed gastric emptying for this patient. Here you can see the outline of the cecum and the sort of individual little lines of the saccules as well. And then the most obvious thing is obviously we've got here all of these formed fecal pellets, fairly uniform, fairly circular. Showing that the stasis is resolving at this point. And we do perform barium studies fairly commonly in rabbits. So again, what are the limitations for radiography? Lots of great uses, but what do we consider our limitations? Again, restraint. So whether that's a manual restraint, which for a DV abdomen and a lateral abdomen, I would be doing just a conscious X-ray with some manual restraint, versus sedation if we were wanting to take good quality dental radiographs. Interpretation can certainly be difficult at times because we have got just a 2D image, and therefore we've got superimposition of one structure on top of the other. And it can certainly lack, therefore, sensitivity for certain conditions. So here you can see a lateral view of a rabbit skull, fairly normal, just for assessment of dentition. And if we're wanting to get these kind of images, that rabbit either has to be conscious and therefore held onto its side in a lateral position, which could be certainly deemed stressful. Or it has to be sedated. And here you can see a patient that's been sedated just with a low dose midazolam and buprenorphine. We've got, let's just look, we've got an IV catheter in the marginal ear vein. We've put lubrication on the eye because when they're sedated, they don't really blink very much, so we don't want that eye drying out. And then we've got some flow by oxygen just provided with a face mask, and obviously making sure that we've got our left-right marker as well. And it's very important when we're trying to get these lateral views that we're aiming to have the mandible, and particularly the ramus of the mandible, parallel with one another, but perpendicular to the table. And that means that we're having the two jaws lined up beautifully, one on top of the other. For our oblique views, again, we have to think about positioning, and this is quite difficult to do in the conscious patient because, understandably, they don't want their neck to be twisted. And we're aiming for a sort of 45-degree oblique angle. And why I like these, I almost like them more than the laterals, is because it allows us to see the individual line of the teeth, and you can see here we've got protrusion of the reserve crown just through the bottom of the mandible there. And DV, again, plenty of uses for these kind of images. Here we can hopefully appreciate that we've got quite an obvious fracture of the ramus of the mandible here, with a little bit of lateral displacement as well. So certainly, in general practice, radiography can play a very important role and allow some good diagnosis to be made. What I want you to consider, however, is again these limitations. So, just having a look at this radiograph here, and I'm just going to give you a little moment. This is a VD view, the rabbit is intubated, and we've got fairly nice symmetry here with some string tying in the veterinary string tying in the ET tube as well. But I'd like you just to take a moment. I'll just pause for 30 seconds and let you have a look and see if you can firstly identify the main pathology that we've got in this X-ray. Okay, so hopefully what we can see is if we just focus in on this area here, and I'll take that blue circle away again. So what you'll appreciate is, and again, if you've not looked at many rabbit skull X-rays, just do a spot the difference for symmetry. But we can see that we are missing quite a bit of the lateral wall of this tympanic bulla at this point. And that's something that from this X-ray, would we be comfortable taking this animal to surgery based on the findings of that? Well, if we look at it from a CT, so this is the same animal, X-ray versus CT, and what you can quite clearly see is that this area here, we've just completely lost all of that lateral wall. So here it's just all been sort of eaten away. Also, instead of having a gas-filled tympanic membrane, we can see that it's filled with some soft tissue opacity, unlike the other side, which is still in a normal gas-filled state. On top of that, and why CT is very nice, is that if we're looking in this region here, again, if I just take that away so you can see, we've got some mineralization up at the edge of the top of the mandible there. And again, you can appreciate that then on CT a lot clearer as well. So that leads us nicely into CT and why it might be quite a useful modality. So, I mean, what I would say with CT is we've got basically it is X-rays, but the CT images are obtained by this sort of rotating an X-ray tube around the patient and computing the data. And the data is really the amount of X-ray received by a collecting ring of X-ray detectors. Now, the patient can then be viewed as multiple radiographic images, with every image representing one slice, if you like, of the patient. And every image consists of pixels, also known as voxels or volume elements. So with CT now, there is advanced CT software that comes hand in hand, and that's really invaluable for reconstructing these images. And multiplanar reconstruction, or MPR, allows all views in both the X and Y as well as the Z axis to be viewed individually. So what that means is that we're never getting this superimposition of the structures. We can look at everything as it stands, as its own entity. So in veterinary medicine, the most commonly used CT scanners are the multi-slice helical scanners. And technology has really advanced considerably since the 70s when it was first used. And such that, you know, the head of a rabbit now can have as many as 250 individual little slices taken of that with 1 millimeter thickness. So it means that CT really is an excellent scanning tool, and particularly useful for diseases of the head as well. So for myself, working in a referral hospital, although we do first opinion as well, we've recently seen a big upgrade. We've gone from a helical 4 slice, which we were using up until August 2016, and now we've got this shiny, fancy newer one, which is a helical 64 slice, and it just the difference in the definition of the images is really very marked. So historically, for CT scans, they certainly were very expensive, and therefore probably a lot of rabbit owners were discouraged from taking up that option. It also took a lot of time to perform the CT scans, and that's obviously very relevant if your patient's quite compromised and sick. That with the fact that the small size of the patient and the fact that it's only in recent years that the resolution of the images have really improved. And I liked a quote I found from one of the BSAVA formularies, which said that one of the first CT images, or CAT scan images as it was known then, took 5 minutes to create just one 13 millimetre slice. So, I mean, things have certainly advanced considerably since then. Historically as well, scanning has always been used with the patient under a general anaesthetic or a sedation. And obviously the patient staying still is a very important factor for the image. But we'll talk about the use of conscious CT in a little moment. And I think, you know, it's fair to say that CT machines used to be somewhat of a rarity. And because not many rabbits had undergone, you know, scanning, interpretation of the images were certainly more challenging in the early days, you know, actually knowing what is normal and what is a disease or pathology. So we've advanced a lot, such that now, depending on where you live, obviously, but CT is certainly a lot more affordable than it used to be. A lot of the referral hospitals are now having sort of rabbit prices, to encourage the use of them in this species. CT can also be performed conscious, and that's something that we're quite big advocators of up here at the Royal Dick at Edinburgh. And why we like doing it conscious? Well, in our really sick patients, it significantly reduces the risk. We don't have to worry about a sedation or an anaesthetic. We don't perceive it to be quite as stressful as having to be sedated and recover from a sedation or an anaesthetic as well. And our scanning times are very short. We can pretty much do everything in about 3 minutes. We also do full body scans, and that's both very interesting because we find a lot of unexpected findings. Certainly it's when we're thinking of rabbits as a prey species, it shouldn't be a surprise to us that we are finding unexpected disease because they are designed to conceal these things. So by doing a full body scan when we're looking for dental disease, we may then discover lesions on the liver, for example. So we have made a lot of interesting discoveries based on this scanning modality. So I just want to talk a couple of numbers with you just to show, certainly in Scotland, how the numbers have perhaps increased in recent years. So this is just in our establishment, but we're one of the few places in Scotland that does CT rabbits. So back in 2013, we were CTing merely 22 rabbits in a year. We saw a huge increase in 2016, up to 93. And then this year, we've exceeded that already, and we've got another 2 months to go before the end of the year. We've also seen a similar trend in our non-rabbit exotic animals, so the avian species and as well as the reptile. So not as impressive numbers as the rabbits, but certainly 43 this year, minus the month of November and what will be December as well. And for us, the thing that we're quite proud of is that in the last 3 years, we used to do a lot more rabbits under sedation or general anaesthetic. And that's because in the literature, that's what's accepted, it's what's written, it's what's done in dog and cat. So we sort of copied that. But then the more patients that were too sick for sedation and anaesthetic, the more we attempted to do conscious CT scans, such that now, in the 10-month period, the 119 that we have given CT scans to, 116 were conscious. So how are we achieving that? Well, we're using a device known as the vet mouse trap. So here you can see a little chap sitting in the box, and it's basically a Perspex tube. So the vet mouse trap, well, it was originally designed for cats. It was invented by a professor that no longer works but used to work at the University of Illinois in the Veterinary Teaching Hospital. And it was Professor Robert O'Brien who was the head of diagnostic imaging. He designed this transparent plexiglass tube, and it's just like a little tunnel that the rabbit sits in. There's a few publications on it, so if you are interested, you could do some literature searches. I've quoted one here. And as I said, it was originally designed for the use in cats. And one of the papers shows 22 cats in which of the 20 cases they had positive results and were able to make appropriate diagnosis with minimum motion artifact as well. So this is the mouse trap. We give the rabbit a little towel to sit on, usually in a little groove so that they hunker down. We've got a little opening up front here where we can pipe oxygen in. But ultimately, they just tend to sit there. They don't tend to mind too much. It's about 40 centimetres in length by about 18 centimetres in diameter. So for our giant breeds, they're not going to fit in here. But for anything under 3 kilos, they'll sit quite comfortably. So, is it too good to be true doing conscious CT scanning? Well, we do occasionally get some movement artifact, and the protocol that our imaging team use is at a slightly lower image quality than if we're using an anaesthetic, for example. Here you can see one CT image on the right where we've got just a little bit of blur. You can see these kind of edges here and a little bit of movement. And this was just because the rabbit was panting excessively, which we wouldn't have had it been anaesthetised. So sometimes there are some cons with it, but overwhelmingly, the majority of the time, we are achieving diagnostic images with conscious CT. So, what's the order of events for a CT before we go on to look at some of the images? Well, we always want to place an intravenous catheter in our patient, and we use the marginal ear vein for that. There's a number of reasons we do this. I mean, one, our patients are usually debilitated, and that's the reason they're requiring, diagnostic investigation. So often they'll already have a catheter placed for providing fluid therapy. A point to note is that we tend not to put rabbits on drips. We find that they like to chew through their drip line. So we place a catheter with a needleless port, and that allows us to administer fluid boluses at frequent points throughout the day according to their maintenance and dehydration requirements. For the marginal ear vein, we clip the fur over the ear, the vein, and we apply a local anaesthetic cream for 10 to 15 minutes prior to catheter placement. We don't wrap the ear after local anaesthetic cream has been applied. It can be left up for up to 40 minutes to take effect, but I find even after 10, the rabbits are less responsive to having a catheter placed. So we place the IV catheter. The reason for that is that the majority of our patients will receive intravenous contrast as part of their CT scan, so we want to make sure that we have IV access. We create this towel bed, and that allows the patient to sit nice and comfortably in a little groove. And then we connect our intravenous contrast line into the ear catheter. Now, I should say, if we're suspecting renal disease, then we don't give the IV contrast. We'd obviously perform bloods and ensure that we're happy with the patient before considering that. Security is key. We don't want the rabbit to be struggling and potentially making an escape. So we have a little belt, and that means that they're nicely secured in. And then, although the diagnostic imaging room is quite a quiet room, we always place a little cover just over the box, but leaving the very front uncovered. And you can see we've got oxygen piping in through the front there. We find that if we have a quiet, calm, and darker environment, the rabbits are less likely to have a dig or try and move about. Usually they just hunker down and stay nice and still for us. And at this point, we're ready for the scan. So we have further belt just over to make sure again that there's no movement possible, nothing's going to fall off the table. And because we've left the front of the box open, it means that from the imaging suite we can view and see our patient to make sure that they're not distressed, they're not struggling, and that we're happy that they're sitting nice and still for us as well. So although this isn't an absolute, with the newer machines, the CT scanning is very, very quick. Often it's as little as 30 seconds per scan, with minimal downtime between. The image here, you can see there's a little tube and that's got a snake in having a CT scan. But ultimately we take three scans. We do our whole body. We take our high definition of the main area that we're interested in, whether that be head, lungs, or abdomen. And then our third scan is our contrast. So the whole body CT, and again, just explaining what we're looking at. So this is the CT mousetrap, the vet mousetrap here outline. The animal is going to be sitting on towels. And we've got outer ear here and here. We've got the spine of the scapula, and the same on the other side. We've got the black sort of O of the trachea, a little bit of lung, another little bit of lung, and then cardiac outline. So this is just an example of one individual slice of the whole body. This is an abdominal whole body view. And if we just go back to this other one, hopefully you'll appreciate that we've got a little bit better definition in the thoracic area compared to the abdomen. And part of the reason for that is the different anatomical So fluids ingest of soft tissue and bone have varying gray values according to the amount of the X-ray attenuation by the tissues. So these values are known as Hounsfield unit, or HU as it's often written. So water has a value of zero, and darker areas known as hyperattenuating areas, that's like air and fat, so they have negative HU values. So again, if we're just looking, you can see a little gas pocket there just in the GI tract. This is at the level of the stomach. So this is the stomach outline running here, like so. We've got liver just sitting up in here. And then these structures here are formed fecal pellets within the colon. And again, if we think that black are hypoattenuating area, black is in this case, air within the colon. The lighter areas, known as hyperattenuating, they have a positive Hounsfield value, and they include sort of mineralized areas, so bone, for example, or if we've got mineralization calcification within tissues, and also contrast medium as well. And then we, after our full body, we take our high definition areas of interest, and that can be as little a slice size as 0.6 millimeters, so very small. And again, just point out a couple of things. So this is a tympanic bulla, and we can see that we've got fill of the other tympanic bulla. And this is a nice normal looking lung field, and we've got a cardiac outline. Some of the vessels, big vessels, and then normal lung tissue as well. So very useful that we can take these high definition images. For giving contrast, so we give contrast routinely. As I said, the only time we don't is if our patient is dehydrated, significantly debilitated, or we're worried about renal impairment. We used to inject this manually, but now we use a power injector. So this is the power injector here, and you can see it's got two syringes connecting on a cable which is going in and through the back of our mousetrap to attach to the ear catheter. Power injector is really quite nice because it allows for a controlled flow rate, so we can really standardize our administration. And we're using an iodinated contrast medium. So lots of brands of different iodinated contrast, but we're giving, this is the one that we're using, 2 mL per kilo as our dose, at a rate of 0.8 mils per second. And we flush afterwards with heparinized saline, and what we're aiming to do is to catch a parenchymal phase of the CT scan. So again, looking at this image here, black is gas, so this is part of the lung. Actually, this is a tumour within the lung, sorry. And we've got a bit of a cystic structure on the liver. But what we can see here is after contrast, the vessels of the liver are very nicely highlighted. And after we've given contrast, we do give IV fluids as well, just to help sort of flush things through. So, with all of this in mind, when are we actually wanting to use CT in our rabbits? Well, it's very, very useful for conditions of the head, so dental disease, middle ear disease, and certainly respiratory disease in terms of issues with the sinuses, the turbinates, and recesses. It's also very useful for trying to identify neoplasms, including metastatic spread, looking for urinary calculi, liver lobe torsions, cysts, and so forth. It certainly has a lot better definition of soft tissue structures than in radiographs, and that's particularly true when we're using our contrast agent as well. What I like about CT is that you can get a little bit fancy and you can do three-dimensional reconstructions. So that could be anything from just the skin, and doing a reconstruction of a mass on the skin down to bone, which you can see on this image here. So if we're wanting to plan a surgery, or we're trying to educate the owner and allow them to visualise the problem, then these reconstructions can be very useful. So the last little part of the webinar, we're just going to go through some normal anatomy to begin with. And then we're going to look specifically at some examples of images from certain cases that we diagnosed by CT evaluation. So I'll explain the photo that we've got here, this image of a rabbit. So we've got upper incisor, we've got the lower incisor coming here. Now we've no cheek teeth at this point because we're just off midline. So the cheek teeth would be starting about this level, but that would be if we scroll to the left or the right. And what we can see is, you know, rabbits are obligate nasal breathers. So airflow comes in through the nares, through all of these fine little scrolls and turbinates. And then we're into the sort of recesses in the sinuses before making our way backwards down to the nasopharynx. Our soft palate here is sitting over our glottis. And obviously we've got a nice clear route down into the trachea at this point here. So if we had a tracheal stricture, if we had a lot of mucus or a tumour within the turbinates or the sinuses, then you know these would be very obvious to see from a CT evaluation. And this again comes down to the fact that we can look at all of these images, whether it be in an X, a Y or a Z plane, to allow us to access, rather, to allow us to see structures without superimposition. So we have a video here, and I'm just going to see if I can get this to... So I'm going to go through this just nice and steadily. We're going to start at the end, so bear with me 2 ticks. So I would advise that you make your screen view bigger on the video at this point. So right, so here we've got the upper cheeks and the sort of scroll of the nose, and we're just going to take little jumps going back through. So that bright white is the upper incisors. And that's if you part the lips, obviously you see the upper incisors coming at a vertical plane. If we scroll back ever so slightly, you'll see that these incisors, we then cut them at their cross section. So we're just getting into the cross section about here. So we've got the little circle is the cross section of the upper incisor. That bright white at the sort of bottom is the lower incisors now coming into view. And you can clearly see that we've got a nasal septum, so that line between the little scrolly structures, which are your turbinates on either side. As we move further back, again, we can see that we can see the cross-section of those lower incisors, and the little 2 points of black within the mouth is just gas within, sitting either side of the tongue. We'll keep moving back a little bit more. Doesn't appear to want to jump for me. Let's see if we can play that the other way. So we're just having a little... So I'm going to play this going back the way, so let's just pause that a minute. Okay, so now where we're at is we're at the level of the diaphragm, and we're going to be coming rostrally towards the nose. So we can see that we've got a bit of blur, which is diaphragm. Continue to play it, and then we've got lungs, which are black, and then you can see that sort of a solid mass down at the bottom of the lung field, and that's the heart outline. And this is a nice normal lung field. The round sort of structures you can see, they're not tumours, those are big vessels. We know that not only because that's the correct position anatomically, but also in terms of Hansfield unit as well. Cardiac outline nice and normal. If we look above the chest, you can see the vertebrae, and if we fall off to the side, you can see that we've got the scapula as well. We're continuing further forward now, we're coming towards the mediastinal area, You can see that we're into, we've got trachea there, a little bit of fat around the mediastinum. And now I'm going to pause and we're going to turn our attention up towards the top of the head. And if we look how we've got almost a figure of eight of the black gas, and that's at the point of the ears. Now, normal bunny ears should have gas going all the way down the external ear canal to the level of the tympanic membrane, and then further to that in the middle ear or the tympanic bulla, we'll see gas as well. So you can see how lovely and gas-filled these bulla are, how nice and symmetrical, that the lateral wall of the bulla is intact. It's not thickened with no lysis. We continue moving further rostral. Again, we pause and you can see the nice symmetry of those bulla. This rabbit was CT scan conscious, so she just sat there and allowed these images to be taken. As we come further forward again, you can see that that long black area is the trachea, and that's just because she's sitting with her head in an upright position. We can follow the lower jaw up to the temporomandibular joint as well, and now we're at the level of the eyeballs. So you can see that there's a little projection either side, which is the eyeballs. We're working our way forward now, and we're going to see the cheek teeth coming into view. So there we've got the cheek teeth. We can just look at them individually one at a time. And obviously with these are the raw images, but with the MPR, we can rotate this, we can make 3D images. And again, if we look away from the teeth and back up towards that nasal passage, you can see these delicate little scrolls and turbinates and sinus structures. So overall, we can get a very nice view of the rabbit head, and therefore picking up of any potential pathology that we've got. Okay, so moving on. Again, I just want to show you a couple of certain images at certain cross-sectional points. So our bunny sat in the mousetrap. If we're where the blue line is taking a picture, then again we can see that we have got the upper lips, the lower lower chin, and just a faint outline of an incisor and a little scroll of the nostril with a bit of frontal bone. As we move further back, again we can see our tympanic bulla, gas filled, normal wall thickness, looking very nice and healthy. A little bit further back, and you see how the angle sort of changes with the bulla, and that's because we're making our way up towards the external ear canal. And as we keep scrolling, in a normal rabbit, we should be able to follow gas all the way to the external part of the ear, like so. At the level of the chest, so as I pointed out, we've got the cardiac outline, black as gas, so nice normal lung field. And you can see the scapula with the spine of the scapula here on our vertebrae with muscle sitting either side. At the level of the stomach, and you'll appreciate the difference in the definition at this point, but again we can see the gastric outline here with the speckled kind of ingesta fill, and it's quite normal to have a little bit of gas as well. On the ventral aspect, we've got the cecum just running up down here, again with little speckles of gas through, and then the right kidney outlined at this point here. So this is without contrast, but we're still already been able to see with some definition some of the soft tissue structures. So the last little spell, we're just going to have a look through some examples of pathology that we've diagnosed by CT evaluation. So to begin with, we've said that it's very good for looking at dental pathology. Even if you haven't looked at many CT images, again, we spot the difference and you'll appreciate that this doesn't look quite right. What we had here was a dental abscess involving the two of the lower cheek teeth, and we had loss of the lateral wall of the mandible with some lysis, and an associated abscess. By knowing exactly where the problem is and what teeth are involved, it allows for surgical planning to be a lot more precise. We were able to pick the exact spot as to where to be making our incision, which teeth exactly were involved and therefore would be removed, and that always stands the rabbit in the best chance of making a fuller recovery. When things are very advanced, we can see conditions like this developing. This rabbit had fairly normal dentition on her right side, but the left side, you can see that the top tooth looks not too bad. It has grown a little bit elongated, but only because it hasn't got anything to wear against underneath. And we've got a lot of osteomyelitic changes, with fragments of reserve crown present as well. And that's a real concern in terms of going ahead with a surgery. This rabbit presented with abscess to the ventral mandible, and it's only when we performed the CT we realised the true extent of the pathology, with quite a progressive mandibular osteomyelitis associated with this rostral soft tissue abscessation. And we also had a local lymphadenopathy as well, which is unsurprising. Further back, so this is at the level of the second cheek tooth, second premolar on the upper side, but towards where normally the last molar should be, this was the view that we had. So this is the same animal, and you can see the level of destruction of normal anatomy there. So this will determine whether or not we would proceed with the surgery, whether euthanasia is an option for the animal, and certainly guide us a lot better, as well as providing the owners with a very realistic view of what we're actually able to achieve when the pathology is so severe. Again, having to think about MPR views, and that just means that these are raw images again, but it does just add a little better depth of understanding. So on this view here, let me just point, we are, you can imagine that we're standing on the tongue, looking up at the roof of the mouth, standing on the roof of the mouth, looking down at the tongue. So this is looking down at the lower arcades, so this is the lower left side. So we've got the first and second premolar on the lower side, a fairly normal dental anatomy arcade on this right side with normal mandibular bone thickness either side, but just loss of the remaining teeth and osteomyelitic lesion again. Looking at it from a side view, you can see we've got a little bit of a step mouth or a wave mouth on the upper arcades, and the lower we've just got one, two teeth, and then all of these osteomyelitic changes. So again, from a severity point of view, really quite dramatic and severe. Compare that with the normal anatomy, and these are two images of the same rabbit, one just focusing on the more rostral cheek teeth, and the other one looking at the more caudal ones. So again, we can see this lovely normal sinus anatomy, all these individual structures very well defined. We've got our turbinates at this point, everything's looking very nice and normal. You can see the little folds, the rugae off on the roof of the mouth, a bit of the tongue, upper incisor, lower incisor, and then a fairly steady occlusal angle between the two. And again, a nice normal mandible, ventral border of the mandible with no lytic areas. So quite nice anatomy on this one. The other thing which when we start looking for things and when we're doing a lot more of these rabbit high definition head CT scans, we're finding pathology that we never expected before, or it's not been reported as widely before. So we have found a number that have arthritis of the temporal mandibular joint. And these might be animals that have been on an excellent diet all their lives with very rabbit savvy owners, And at age 7 or 8, they're starting to develop dental disease, but unilateral dental disease because they're chewing more on one side because it's painful to chew on the other. And when we've investigated these, then we have found temporomandibular issues and therefore long-term pain relief in the form of tramadol, for example, might be an option for these cases. Other things that we can diagnose, so this is a post-contrast image taken at the level of the eye, and we've got one eyeball here and another one here. And what you can hopefully appreciate is that we've got a unilateral exophthalmos. Now, in rabbits, one of the first things that springs to mind is perhaps we've got a tooth-root abscess of one of the maxillary cheek teeth, usually the first or second. And that's exactly what we had in this case. With the contrast being administered, we've got a nice outline of that abscess. But again, it allowed us to pick our point of entry to drill through and try and drain and flush this abscess while removing the affected tooth as well. I also want to talk about a condition as well as the temporomandibular joint problems. Another issue that we're identifying more and more commonly during our CTs is ear disease. Very, very common in our lop-eared rabbits, much more than our upright ears. And just to go through a few images here, so our sort of normal anatomy, you can see a gas-filled bulla with gas extending up through the external ear canal. Now, otitis externa is by definition inflammation of the external ear canal, but a CT sort of definition would be if we've got an ear canal filled with this hypoattenuating material, whether that be wax, pus, or debris. But you can see that this material fills all the way down, and then we've got a frank line, which we would presume is the eardrum still intact, preventing all of this material from going through into the middle ear. So this would be what we'd consider a grade one, where the material is in the ear, doesn't seem to be affecting the eardrum too much, and just probably creating a little bit of dampening of the rabbit's hearing. A grade two is when we have these lateral pouches, or ear base abscesses as they're called, but in actual fact they're just swellings and pouches of material within the external ear canal. And we've got bilateral ones on this side, but again gas-filled bulla. So a grade two of the otitis externa. Clinically, this looks like a swelling, which often because the rabbit fluff, you can't see it, you can only feel it. And when you cut into these, this is a cadaver, but when you cut into these, you can see that we've got this often quite thick caseous material. And the reason we have these swellings is because ear cartilage in the rabbit only extends down to here, and then we have a gap from here to here until we're at the tympanic bulla. And so when you have a lot of material building up, it can't go inwards because it's against the skull, so it pouches outwards, and we get this outpouching of the ear canal. The final grade that we give for the otitis externa is a grade three, where we have an actual bulging. So we've not got a rupture, but we've got a bulging of this membrane as well. Now, otitis media is probably the hot topic at the moment, mainly because clinical signs are often asymptomatic, so that the patient can often come in and we're diagnosing these problems at CT when we haven't appreciated there's perhaps even been external ear disease, although most of the time there is, and it's an extension of the otitis externa. But it is something worth considering for your patients that have recurring GI stasis, perhaps facial nerve contracture. And if we're talking a primary otitis media, that can occur secondary to respiratory disease, where we've got ascending infection from the eustachian tube, or in a secondary case where we've got extension of all that fill from the otitis externa rupturing through the eardrum. And ultimately, as we saw with the temporomandibular joint arthritis, If we have an issue on one side, it can lead to dental disease through chewing being just on one side. So, what are our grades for keratitis externa? Well, our grade one is when we're just seeing a very small amount of the hypoattenuated material, and so the full bulla is not filled. We've still got some gas pockets, but we've certainly got material in there that isn't normal. Our grade two is when we've got complete fill of this bulla. So we've got now a concern that perhaps this could become a bit more of a serious problem. And then our grade three is when we're in a bit of a bad way, and these are surgical cases. And this is when we've got bony destruction, often quite expansile and lytic sort of lesions, where normal anatomy is just not obvious anymore. I'm going to skip that one there, and we're going to move on to her thoracic pathology now. So for the thoracic pathology, again, looking at lung fields, CT is very sensitive for this, so it's a very good modality for identifying and diagnosing a lot of respiratory related problems. So here we have a view here, where hopefully you'll appreciate this chest is a lot more full than it should be, with just a little bit of lung either side. We've got the bifurcation of the trachea going off to either bronchi, and we've got, if you can appreciate, this little structure here, which is actually the heart that's been pushed out of the way. So we can see that we've got a heart here, but all of the other structure, when we look at, on a contrast view, you can see contrast medium within the heart. You can see that this structure has cystic components to it, and it's really very large. So top of the differential diagnosis list would be a thymoma for a case like this, and in fact this was what was confirmed in this rabbit's case. Now thymomas can obviously grow extremely large, but often it's not until they're very large that the clinical signs become more apparent, with bilateral exophthalmos, exercise intolerance, lethargy, gut stasis, and so forth. Now, although CT can be very good at showing just very slight changes, I wanted to show you more dramatic ones because they're always that bit more exciting. And we can see this poor rabbit here with lots of lesions in the chest. And again, typical sort of cannonball style lesions. And this was metastatic disease. When we looked on the abdomen views, there was a mass on the liver, but there was also this structure here in the caudal abdomen. When we gave contrast, you can see that we've got a contrast enhancing rim around this. And this was a primary uterine adenocarcinoma with secondary severe metastatic spread. So unfortunately not a good outcome for this rabbit. But why CT was nice is that this presented to me for actually a routine vaccination at 5:30 of an evening. I knew immediately the animal was very thin. Its chest had poor compliance. It also had very noisy respiratory breaths, and I could feel a large mass in the abdomen. I didn't want this rabbit to have to wait overnight for further diagnostics, so we put the little one in the mousetrap with oxygen, put it through the CT, and we saw the severity of the disease. And when that was explained to the owner at about 7 o'clock, by the time we got results, we opted for euthanasia because of how poor the rabbit was doing. So we can get really quick answers from CT without the need for restraint, without the need for sedation. In cases like this, it can be very useful. Here we've got one which is still quite severe pathology, but just a little bit more subtle. This has sort of multifocal, ill-defined areas of sort of increased pulmonary attenuation. And when we look on the MPR views, there was quite a bit of bronchial thickening as well. Left was worse than the right. The sort of rest of the thoracic cavity, we had atrial enlargement. We also had some consolidation in the cranial lung lobes as well. So again, very good for picking up these signs which might be missed on X-ray. A couple more things, just last few slides here. When we're CTing a rabbit with dented disease, for example, often we see other signs as well. So here we've got just signs of a GI stasis with just a bit more gas than we would normally want in the GI tract. And this isn't something to be hugely concerned about, but it certainly fits with the fact that the rabbit's perhaps presented with gut stasis, but ultimately the problem is something else underlying. This rabbit presented exactly for dental disease. We've got the stomach here with the ingesta fill with lots of little gas sort of pockets and a little bit of gas cap here. We've got the outline of the left kidney. And then this structure here, and this looks a bit blurry because it's a soft tissue window we're looking at. But this was felt during clinical exam, and it turned out to be a very enlarged spleen. So again, often we're finding things that perhaps the rabbit wasn't referred to or the owner didn't bring it for. So plenty of uses for CT. If we've got lots of calcium sludge in the bladder, the bladder might look something like this. So really very bright, shining images that we're getting. And equally, if the bladder had a contrast agent in, we would expect a similar view. So to finish up, I do want to say that CT is now very much commonplace to be using in rabbit medicine. It is extremely useful, and there are going to be in the coming years a lot more publications on the use of CT in our rabbit species. I do feel from personal experience that conscious CT scans really are the way forward, and it is something that I think other referral centres will sort of get on board with. CT is very time efficient. We're often getting the answers that we need, although obviously with any tests, sometimes things can still be unknown. But it can rule out certainly many disease processes. And obviously, performing conscious CT is a lot less risk to the patient. The final thing to say is that we are using this in other species as well. And the mousetrap we've used for guinea pigs as well as lizards. You can see a little bearded dragon here. So I hope that's given a fairly good overview of CT use and certainly of my experience with it. And if anyone has any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Jenna for a great presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.